my goodness. Oh my gosh. Happy New Year to everyone. This is Thought Patterns with Jason Trachtenberg. I'd like to welcome everyone to the new year, to 2017. This is Thought Patterns, and I'm Jason Trachtenberg, your host, for this hour on Radio Free Brooklyn. The show is called Thought Patterns. Thought patterns, entering and exiting, coming and going, giving and taking, in one ear and, as they say, out the other ear. That's what they say. And I'm your host, Jason Trachtenberg. Today's show will feature news, views, and my favorite segment, sports, weather, and traffic together on the fours. There'll be stories, there'll be songs, there'll be poetry, and there'll be prose that goes and goes and goes. And as far as I'm concerned, these are all thought patterns. Jokes? I'll tell a few. But what I really want to talk about is sour grapes. Sour grapes. Everyone's been telling me, I got sour grapes. It's like, you got sour grapes. You got the sour grapes, is what they tell me. Or I'm acting or reacting in ways that make people say that I've got, you guessed it, the sour grapes. You've got the sour grapes. Emphasis on the. You got them. You got the sour grapes. I hear it all day long. You got sour grapes. Sour grapes, dude. You got sour grapes. You got sour grapes. Well, to that I say that I happen to like my grapes a little sour. And I happen to like my pears a little tart. And believe it or not, and that no one's telling me, hey, tart pears. You got tart pears. No one's telling me that. No, not at all. Not even once. They just defer to the grapes. Tart pears. I like to hear that once in a while. But while we're on the subject, I need my apples to be very crisp. And I like my bananas ripe. Brown freckles, if you will. My nectarines, hard as rock. My watermelon seeded. Because I am particular. Some say that I'm conceited. Conceited about produce, that is. And the power from within. And if you want to call me something, call me a fruitarian. I got sour grapes. Let me tell you a little story from my youth. So everyone gets to know me a little bit better. It's important to know where the hosts are coming from on this network. This story about youth basketball. When I was in fourth, fifth, and sixth grades, and ages 8, 9, and 10 years old, respectively, I participated in youth basketball. Let me tell you a little bit about my experiences from that. We participated in youth basketball. They teach us the fundamentals of the game with equal emphasis on both the fun and the mental. We developed skill sets and practiced drills, layups, rebounding, the bounce pass, the chest pass, zone defense, zone offense, free throws, foul shots. You got to make them both. There's no excuse to miss either one. Our team practiced for hours, 2 to 3 hours a week for months. You do the math. We had uniforms with numbers on the back. My first year, I was number 50. The second year, I was number 55. And then, oddly enough, I can't recall my uniform number from the third and final year of youth basketball. Maybe it was 11, but it was probably 53. It's definitely one of those two numbers. In full disclosure, it was probably 53. But in fuller disclosure, I had visions of it being 11. But in the fullest of disclosures, the year was 1980. The two previous seasons, 1979 and 1978, were memorable for successfully executed layup drills and a full season's worth of games against more than comparable competition. In other words, the other teams were always, let's just say, just a little bit taller than we were. And our team, the 8 and 9 year old boys representing the Jewish Community Center of Bellevue, Washington, 78, 79, 80, this time frame is very important because, well, the music was so good. Youth basketball, late 70s, top that. You can't. But the story continues. As I mentioned earlier, our team was on the short side, not in spirit, but in height. Let's just put it this way. I was the power forward of the team, right? So if those of you know basketball know that we were very, very short. My team actually ran real plays, unlike today's basketball, and we ran real team basketball. It wasn't just pass it to some guy and he shoots a 50-foot shot. That's not basketball. There's team. It's team. What is wrong with these people? Anyway, we were in a real league, had really good uniforms, and really, really good set plays. We had set plays, but we had really, really, really good competition. really good competition who were a lot taller than we were and probably are still taller than we are today. The team would get on a van or a bus and go visit the neighboring teams' towns, from the YMCAs, other youth groups, different schools, church organizations. We had some games in the basements of churches. It was very old school. They were recreation centers, parks. And the funny thing is that although our team is, shall we say, that we practice religiously, we executed our set plays every time up and down the court on offense and on defense. Mm-hmm. Our team would generally lose every game by scores such as 58-6 or 47-14 on a better night. This went on for 3 years. And although I left organized basketball in 1980 on my own terms, I still to this day go down to the neighborhood basketball courts and shoot around with the guys. And they're still quite a bit taller than I am, but lately I've been shooting around with my daughter's boyfriend. And I have a little major breaking announcement that we played a game of horse. And in our first game, I actually, I defeated him in horse. But then for the last like 12 or 15 games, he's beaten me every time. So I think it just goes to say that it's the power of the mental situation. When you decide you're going to do something, you're going to do it. Similarly to, there was a guy in my band, The Pendulum Swings. We're a full-on orchestra. And Harlan Muir, some of you may know him, is a pretty well-known musician around the scene. And he's I don't want to say he's a millennial, but compared to me, he's a millennial. He grew up with video games. And then after one of our shows, we went to this establishment called Barcade. It's a, you guessed it, it's a bar with an arcade in it. Came with the name Barcade. And but they have vintage video games, which of course to me are still new because I have a different interpretation of what vintage is due to my particular age. One thing is, I'm going to go off as a tangent here. Hopefully, we'll get back to the video game thing. But that is that there's no oldies radio anymore. You know, I want to hear bands from the 50s and 60s, the Drifters, the Smokey Robinson and the Miracles, the Supremes, early Beach Boys, Ray Charles, James Brown, then the Letterman, like some of the vocal groups from the 50s. And there's no outlet for that anymore on the radio. I'm a radio guy. I'm not going to do this. Oh, oops, I was about to say I'm not going to do internet radio, but I'm doing internet radio right now. Oh. But as far as when I'm off the clock, I'm on the clock right now. And actually, I'm 4:08 and 57. So I'm on the clock. But when I'm off the clock, I do like to listen to what they call terrestrial radio. Terrestrial radio. Or neither. Or both. I like to listen to actual radio. Up and down the dial. Spin the dial. So there'd be, back in my day, there'd be oldies radio, which would feature songs from the 1950s, 1960s, 1970s. And then the stations that were older than that were called the Stations of the Stars. Ones that would feature songs from the 30s and 40s, Frank Sinatra, and the like. Sinatra and below, as we say, because you can't top Frank. But of course that vanished, and now the actual oldies, at least to my interpretation, what were actual oldies, has vanished. And now what is considered oldies, I still consider new music, such as early 80s music, Duran Duran, Culture Club. A lot of the artists who are dying now are now oldies. But to me, I'd already checked out of society artistically, musically, and aesthetically right around the time Reagan got elected. At that point, it happened a moment when I realized that every song that was coming on the radio was not better than the song that was previously on the radio. Because I think for a while, it was an understood, in my interpretation of top 40 and popular music, how could a song get on the radio that wasn't better than a song that was previously on the radio? And I think there was a pretty good track record of that, minus a couple of, schlocky things and a couple of like inside jobs, that music did, the art of songwriting was evolving up to, in my opinion, it's totally subjective, but up until approximately 1981. Then, coincidentally, with the advent of MTV, it became style over substance. The visual element took front and center. And then, therefore, right around then, certain acts, and I'll name them. I'll say one right now. Wham! Set the bar backwards, and to me, I was artistically bruised. It was a time when, as a 12, 13 year old boy, I could feel that commercialism was now taking precedent over art, and I could feel it happening. And there are those who maybe would say, you know, who would say that, oh, it happened actually in, you know, 1958, it happened in 1948. But from my interpretation, it was ushered in pretty correlationally with the Reagan era and the consolidation of the music industry. And I'll name you some of the casualties. In other words, these acts were not good enough looking to make it anymore, but they'd already made it, such as Christopher Cross, possibly the first casualty of MTV. He had hits such as Sailing, Ride Like the Wind, Arthur's Theme, and The Best That You Can Do. And this was around 1980, 1981. MTV comes out, and his career is over because there was no room for a pudgy, balding man on as a visual. It was over, even though he's a good singer. And those songs were good enough. I mean, they weren't my favorite, but the Bee Gees, A Casualty, Steely Dan, Executed. These guys were homely looking, especially Steely Dan guys. There was no room for them left anymore. And then with the Eagles, you only took the better two good looking guys, you know, were left on. Don Henley and Glenn Frey. Joe Walsh, I don't know what happened to him. He's not that good looking. His career was over. This was really difficult for me to take. I mean, this was a heavy pill for me to swallow, so to speak. I mean, what if your entire indoctrinated belief systems were in truth and in proof absolutely without proven foundation taken away from you? I felt that I had an understanding of art and media and how they could work synergistically together and for the betterment of humanity. And it happened several times in my lifetime. I saw it happen, how music could make us as humans, and maybe even our animal companions, and the way that we treat our animal companions, it could make progress and could create planetary shifts that were felt. As the Beatles changed the world, they were more than a band, and it's been. And then the industry said, "Well, we need to find the next Beatles. You know, who are the next Beatles going to be? Is it going to be Badfinger? You know, is it going to be Cream? Is it going to be Led Zeppelin? Is it going to be, who's the next Beatles? Is it going to be what happened in 1978 when Peter Frampton and the gang did the Sgt. Pepper? We're just going to redo the Beatles then because we're looking for the next Beatles. That's what we're looking for. Let me turn this button up right here. Yeah, I like this button. It's a lot of buttons here. You're on Radio Free Brooklyn, as always. This show is called Thought Patterns. My name is Jason Trachtenberg. I'm here the first Sunday of every month. They might make my show weekly, which I'm pretty excited about because I have a lot of information to share with you, and it really is hard to get it all into 60 minutes. Now, I do remember I was supposed to go back to a story that I got off on the tangent about, and I can't remember what it was. We went off track for a second, and I didn't get back on. There are delays in the system. So let's move on. That's the best. If a little Christopher Cross reference, that was the best that I could do. While we're talking about Radio Free Brooklyn, I'm actually very pleased to announce that Thought Patterns with Jason Trachtenberg. I'm going to move this mic right here to make a little noise. Bloop. Okay. Thought Patterns with Jason Trachtenberg. We have a couple of new sponsors. Very excited about that. One of our new sponsors is Specific Apartment Book Publishers. Our books are not random and cannot be found in any old house. Specific Apartment Book Sellers and Publishers. New sponsor. Another one of our sponsors. I'm very excited about these guys. Jim. From Jim's Chimney Services. Jim's Chimney Services. Our business is through the roof, sweeping the nation. We've had our ups and downs over the years, but Jim's Chimney Services is here to service you. Let me thank another one of our new sponsors. Very excited about this. This is what keeps the show going. You forgot where you park? Our new sponsor is Park & Sons, parking lot and parking lot services. We'll never forget where you parked, even though you may have. We never forgot where you've parked your car. Park & Sons, parking lot services. Our service attendants don't even know their own names, but that's what their employee name tags are for. Hello, my name is Park & Sons, with many locations to serve you. We just don't remember where they are. Park your car here. Give us your car keys. What could possibly go wrong? Park & Sons. Oh, I forgot. Which has been family-owned car parking and car parking services for many, many, a long 37 generation. Our descendants were from the Mayflower. Mayflower caused you skin irritations? Then try spelt flower, and you will look spelt. Park and Sons. We have another advertiser. You think we're just rolling in the dough here. We're very excited about Sirhan Saran Wrap. Sirhan Saran Wrap. You got a bad rap? Try Sirhan Saran Wrap. Used by the finest ambassador hotels, ballrooms, some of the finest hotel kitchens in Los Angeles. Sirhan Saran's wrap does not leave any air bubbles, polka dots, or the like. Sirhan Saran Wrap. Keeping everything airtight, under wraps, if you will, since 1968. It's an airtight case with Sirhan Saran Wrap. And we also have another sponsor. Oh my gosh. We have so many sponsors. Pretty excited about all these guys, to be honest with you. Let me quickly actually tell you about a couple of older sponsors that we have. Of course, for those of you who've heard our show before, know that Steve and the boys down at Max Roach Exterminators. Max Roach and his highly trained team will exterminate any infestation, large or small, preferably small, serving all of Bushwick and beyond. Max Roach Exterminators. If it kills, we move it. Max Roach Exterminators. Thought Patterns with Jason Trachtenberg is also brought to you by our friends at The Best Asbestos. The Best Asbestos. Asbestos removal and asbestos removal services for the best in asbestos, asbestos protection, asbestos removal. The best asbestos can get. The Best Asbestos. Asbestos removal and asbestos removal services. The Best Asbestos. We put the best in asbestos. The Best Asbestos. Thanks, guys. They've been with us for a while, so obviously they're not cleaning that stuff up too well, apparently. I have a few more ads to read to you. These are ads based on products that I really believe in. And these actually are products that you can purchase in stores. These are actual products. And so this is a unsolicited, unpaid advertisement, also known as an ad in the business, for actual products. So I'm not sure what the if this is legal to do this or not, but I'm actually doing real ads on the show. Sorry, Tom and Robert. These are actually real ads, which I did not get paid for. Zand cough drops. Zand is my brand. I've been using these drops for what feels like 20 years going. Actually, it's even been 25. It just feels like 20 because I'm reversing aging. Menthol is my favorite. I use them just for maintenance, just to keep things fresh and cool. Zand drops. These are a superior lozenge. They're the healthiest ingredients, medicinal herbs, and no sugar. It's the only drop of its market on the kind, the only lozenge. And while there's a wide array of flavors, including a new organic line, menthol is still my favorite. Little backstory. I once had my main man, Lippy, transport 15 bags of Zand menthol lozenges through the Scottish border and through security at the airport, brings them into the Edinburgh Festival Fringe, 15 bags, because I couldn't get them over there. Anyway, Zand is my brand. Zand menthols. Lozenges. Another advertisement I'd like to do is, I can totally see Tom busting in here. Your show is turning into one big advertisement. Well, we're on Radio Free Brooklyn, radiofreebrooklyn.com, the home of the advertisements. This piece is called Any Conscious Household. Yogi is the finest tea that there is. American or British, and I've tried them all, no doubt about it. Teas, that is. Just use two bags, and there's nothing wrong with doing that. The funny thing about Yogi tea is that I always took it for granted over the past 20 years, and it actually took me that long to warm up to it. Tea. I always just, you know, thought it would always just be there in the shelves of certain stores and on the shelves and in the cabinets, in the kitchens of any conscious household. Any conscious household held firmly to the belief system that tea, open parentheses, is, in my experiences, close parentheses, responsible for my existence of approximately, and my whole, you know, biological makeup, of approximately 1 to 5% of my entire being in this lifetime. 1 to 5% of me is made up of tea. Yes, tea is me. No coffee, no sugar, just tea and Yogi tea. And in terms of taste and quality, well, that's all I need for tea. Yogi tea. And that was an unsolicited advertisement for Yogi tea and for Zand drops and for our other sponsors too, Jim's Chimney, Sirhan Saran Wrap, Parkinson's. And one thing that's really important is I think it's very important that everyone gets to know a little bit about the hosts who host these shows here at Radio Free Brooklyn. You know, we're not just a collection of ideas and a collection of music that we like. Well, you know, this music is what identifies me, and this music is me. But no, I think it's important to let everyone know a little bit of a personal angle on who we are and what it is that we are all about. And I just wanted to let everyone know in the audience that I really, really, if you could see me now, I'm not sure if there's a video component of the show. I'm pretty sure there's not. But if anyone wants to come bursting into the studio, feel free to do it. It happens, seems like half the time of my show, someone's going to be bursting in the studio. Bam! anyway, I just want everyone to know that I really, 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 I really like 3x5 cards, but I love 4x6 cards. It's just the perfect size. And they're just that much better. So if anyone wants to know what to get me for Hanukkah next year, also known as the Jewish Christmas, get me some 4x6 cards. Here's the insight about shoes. We all wear shoes, right? Most of us anyway. I'm a big shoe guy. Doc Martens. I'm not exactly sure what kind of doctor that Doc Martin actually was, but I can say this much for sure, is that he certainly was not a podiatrist, because those things are uncomfortable. Do another insight for you here. Thought Patterns with Jason Trachtenberg. We're here the first Sunday of every month. Ready for this? Okay. I'm going to need a little audience participation for this one. You'll know what to do. Here we go. Knock, knock. Who's there? Scram! It's a knock and run! Oh! Okay. A little radio insight here, because we are on the radio. I'm a radio guy. I'm not a big fan of NPR, which, after listening to it on and off, mostly off, for my entire life, I believe actually stands for nothing particularly relevant. Seriously, what a marshmallow interpretation of the news that station is. Oh, if I could quote NPR, I actually turned it on for a minute. We bombed Nagasaki in Hiroshima in World War II because that was the way to end the war. It's not that simple. And you're reinforcing this historical inaccuracy. You, NPR, are the problem. You are creating misinformation, and you, NPR, are responsible for the dumbing down of America. Not Fox, not MSNBC, not CNN, not ABC, ABC, CBS, PBS, PBR. No, you, NPR, are dumbing down and marshmallowing America. And I will take on any of your hosts in any sort of debate on any political topic of your choosing. Anytime. I'll put my show. Okay, I actually had a couple of resolutions for 2014. I mean, 2017, and I just broke one of them. One of them is no confrontational art versus art. I know that's a complicated resolution. That's a good name for a band, the Complicated Resolutions. Anyway, no confrontational art versus art, where it's like my art's better than your art, my radio show is better than your. Not necessary, people. It's not necessary. I'll just let the show do the talking. I'll just let it speak for itself. Hey-o. And my other resolution was no jealousy, which I guess is kind of like the art versus art thing. No jealousy. You know, he's got this, she's got that. You know, irrelevant. I got a lot going on, and I need to be really appreciative for that. And I'm going to change the world. I am going to change the world with my music and my art. And those of you who know me well enough know and believe in what I'm doing, know that there is not just truth. I mean, this is life. This is reality. And I'm not going to spend all my money on frivolous monkey business that has no purpose for anyone whatsoever. I'm going to share with the community. I'm going to bring other acts that are worth, you know, worthy of exposure to the public. I'm going to change the dietary. I'm going to change the four or five food groups as we know it, because I have a reinterpretation of that, which I'm going to get into next month. And I'm going to change the world through music and art and generosity in 2017. My other resolution is that I'm going to mind my own business in 2017. I've gotten into this little bit of a habitual habit of sorts where I'm, you know, walking up down the streets of Manhattan and I see someone eating something that I deem ill-advised. Such as even today. A cheese Danish with a coffee. Okay. Yes, that is a digestive holocaust in your stomach. But if I could quote John King, the Minister of Information, a major star of the art star scene, John King, he said, and I quote, "It's not my problem what people put in their mouths. I can't control what people put in their mouths," unquote. And that was John King. And he and I actually are in alignment with nutrition. I think we're probably pretty much the two only, if anyone else would like to prove me otherwise, I think we're the only two people on the art star scene who value nutrition, nutritional health, understand that the oldest adage is true. You are what you eat. 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 And I also like to do sentences where I put an emphasis on a different word of a sentence each time I say it, because it works differently each way that I do it. Actually, I wasn't going to talk about. Let me go back into the resolutions, and I'm going to go talk about emphasis on words. Resolutions. I got a text today from a number that I didn't recognize. It was a 347 number. It's a New York area code, and it was a number that I did not recognize, and that you know, Happy New Year, right? I was like, oh gosh, who is this, right? Because what happens, at least with my phone, I'm a flip phone guy. What happens with my phone is that when I lose my phone, which, you know, happens once a year, it happens. Lose it, break it, break it, lose it. Lose it, break it, break it, lose it, lose it, break it, break it, lose it, lose it, break it, right? With my phone, once a year, I lose all my numbers. I lose all my contacts. And then I have to spend the next month saying, hey, who's this? Even for my mom, who's this, right? You know, I lose my phone. Who is this, right? So I got a 347, Happy New Year. And I'm like, and of course I say, hi, Happy New Year to you. This is Jason. I'm terribly sorry. I lost all of my contacts when I got my new phone. Who's this? And he goes, rent is too damn high. And I'm like, oh my God, blush. It's Jimmy McMillan from the Rent is Too Damn High party texting me to wish me a Happy New Year. Unbelievable. Jimmy McMillan from the Rent is Too Damn High party is texting me to wish me a Happy New Year. And I'm going to say that one more time. And you can Google this guy. Jimmy McMillan from the Rent is Too Damn High party is texting me to wish me a Happy New Year. And that is pretty impressive. All right, that's pretty impressive. Little celebrity news for you as we reach the halfway point of the show here on Radio Free Brooklyn. We're almost at the halfway point. The show is called Thought Patterns. I'm Jason Trachtenberg. Do a little celebrity news. Just back up for a second here. I don't know if anyone saw the debacle in Times Square, which is not the Second Avenue subway, by the way. The debacle in Times Square yesterday, which was Mariah Carey's lip sync fail. Let me just say this. Kudos to the backup dancers who didn't miss a beat, no pun intended. They were so sharp. They're getting paid a fraction of what she is. And they did the old adage, the other old adage, go on with the show. You just go on with it. Yes, your backing track isn't working, but your backing dancers are working. So just go along with it. Her unprofessionalism just made me want to make it in show business so bad, because I know what to do. And I've lived a life of more tricky artistic manipulated mazes to get myself out of. And I know how to handle when things go wrong in show business. She doesn't. And Mariah Carey, I will take you on right. Oh, geez, I'm doing it again. Remember my resolutions? I resolved not to challenge other artists or other radio stations or radio networks as I was doing earlier. But I'll say this, Mariah Carey, I will take you on in a singing show. I'll sing your blank off. Seriously. And let's have we'll do this thing they call in the theater called obstructions. We'll have everything go wrong that can possibly go wrong, and let's see who can handle it better and who can sing better. Because I will take her on. I have a 5-octave voice, Mariah, and I will take you on vocally and artistically in every possible way. And you know what? I'll take you on in the you know what department as well, too. You know, the I'm the sexy performer department. I will take you on. Okay, Mariah. Take you on right now. If you're listening right now, I challenge you. God, why am I doing this? I told myself. It's Thought Patterns with Jason Trachtenberg. We're here the first Sunday of every month. You know, there's a little edit that happened right there. I don't know if you caught that. Little second seven delay, because I wasn't supposed to be doing that. That's okay. As everyone knows, I'm a public advocate for privacy, and I want to work for an accountant that does the accounting for other accountants, and we'll see where that goes. So little celebrity news, besides the Mariah Carey debacle, which I just had one myself, Janet Jackson is in the news. I don't know if you heard. Janet Jackson is in the news, and she was recently, she's pregnant with centuplets. So Janet Jackson is pregnant with centuplets, which of course will be the new Jackson 5 for the new millennia. The millennial Jackson 5 will be Jackson Janet Jackson's septuplets. But then let's think about millennials. Millennials, so competent in so ways, but yet so unable to just, you know, tie their shoes together like I do. They can't even tie their shoes together. Like when you tie your one shoe to the other shoe and then you can't really walk, they can't even do that. Millennials. But yet they can come up with an app that'll tie their shoes for them. So it's an interesting phenomenon, conundrum, what the millennials have to offer us in our current society. But then I got to thinking about millennials that I thought about it and I kind of went back a little bit. And I thought, wait a second. weren't my great 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 grandparents also millennials from the year 1000, right? But yet, they didn't feel the need to order and take out food 3 meals a day. Jeez, millennials. So here's a couple thoughts. We're here on Thought Patterns, Jason Trachtenberg, here the first Sunday of every month, hopefully going weekly soon, because I got too much information to share. I want to go weekly, baby. Hey, Tom Tenney, if you're listening, I want to go weekly, because I got too much information to share. I do more in 1 minute on this show than some... Oh, I'm not going to say... God, why can't I just like stop taking on other performers and producers? It's not cool. I just want to be myself. I took on 2 interns, though. I mean, I brought them in. I didn't take them on. I took on 2 interns, and I've made some major positive changes in my life. I can't tell. I don't know if you can tell the clarity that I'm dealing with right now, but it is like it's like a contact lens. Seriously, I can see right through it, and everything's even like 30 times as strong. It's amazing. I'm so excited about 2017. You have now you know. But let me. I guess we've got to talk about politics a little bit in this Trumpian world that we live in. It's really important that we stick together and be aware that certain marginalized communities may be persecuted. For example, we need to defend the rights of the LGBT community because everyone has the right to choose their own sandwich, even vegans. A little food for thought for you. Something to think about once in a while. You know what? I think it's important to do that. Oh, here's something. So, couple notes about Santa Claus. I heard this recently. The reason why Santa Claus's jacket is red is because obviously Santa Claus, you know, just doesn't go back to, you know, back to Jesus. People like to put them, you know, like, oh, maybe Santa Claus came from the year one. No, he was actually invented, you know, or concocted. There, I'm being generous. See, I'm being generous in 2017. Santa Claus was concocted, you know, as a symbol for, you know, the jolly man, you know, brings the gifts. In the, apparently in the late 1800s, although there's actual earlier traces that go back to the 1600s, but not much before that. Somehow the advent of the United States of America and Santa Claus somehow correlationally accurate. I'm not sure, but nonetheless, why is Santa Claus's jacket red? Because, are you ready for this? In the late 1800s, Coca-Cola was coming up with an advertising campaign wanting to feature the jolly old man, and so the advertising executive, I don't know if they had executives back then, but the advertising worker guy, he drew a drawing of an associate of his, you know, a jolly old man with a beard, and they wanted to put him in a coat that would match the Coca-Cola campaign, you know, the Coca-Cola brand, which of course was that bright fire engine red, which they still use to this day. And that's, and they wanted to have Santa Claus drinking Coca-Cola. You know, it's an iconic image at this point, of course, you know, it goes way, way back. So that was the image, but that's why they put him in the red coat, because the red was for Coca-Cola and the white. Interesting. Oh, trivia question. Okay, here's a trivia question. If anyone can answer this question, please send me an email. My name is Jason Trachtenberg. Please send me an email to thependulumswings@yahoo.com. Thependulumswings@yahoo.com. If anyone can answer this trivia question, and I will give you a free cooked meal in my apartment, value over $1,000, because it will add that much health to you. It's a health meal I'll cook to you in my apartment. To the first listener who can answer this question and email me the answer to thependulumswings@yahoo.com. In fact, if several people answer it correctly, I'll just do a little group meal worth millions. My cooking will save your life. My cooking will add years to your life. I have reversed the aging process in my kitchen for pennies. And I'm going to get into that a little bit later with some recipes that I'm going to share for you in the second half of the program. But real quickly here, so about Santa Claus. Right. Let me get this straight. He's making a list. And he's checking it twice. He's making a list. Right. Then he has to check it twice. Sounds like someone's got a little borderline OCD going on. Right. Yeah. Hey, let me tell you about something that's been going on lately. I know this is not just in New York, but it's in other cities too. When there is a dispute going on between management and upper management, and upper management, and involving unions. You know what they do when there's a union dispute going on, and you know where, when a building or a company uses non-union labor, what do they do? Everyone, that's right. They bring out the 20-foot-tall inflatable rat. They bring out the 20-foot-tall inflatable rat as a way of letting everyone know that this business conducts bad services, or that this business is using non-union labor. And so, you know, because the rats, hey, you're a rat, you're a scab, you're bringing in the rat. So bring in the 20-foot-tall inflatable rat. You've seen them, wow, right? really, really intimidating. Like you wouldn't want to, cross that rat. He's really scary. He's got fangs. He's like scarier than an actual rat. And living in Bushwick, I actually know a little bit about that. Major controversy, major scandal going on. Are you ready for this? The company that was responsible for bringing in the 20-foot tall inflatable rats, you know, and the generators and the pickup trucks that keep them blown up all day. You ready for this? The company that was responsible for bringing in the 20-foot tall inflatable rats was using non-union labor. And so therefore the union had to hire another company to bring in a 40-foot tall inflatable cat to put up against the 20-foot tall inflatable rat to let the inflatable rat company know that, you know, your game is over, my friend. Game over. All right, because the 40-foot tall inflatable rat will, do I even need to go there? I mean, this is a family show, so I'm not even going to go there. Major union controversy. I was in a restaurant recently. Actually, it was a club. It's called the Footlight Club. It's up on Seneca Street. It's sort of like the New Bowery Poetry Club. A lot of the acts, Victor Vernardo and Tim Shea, have an open mic they do there every Mondays. I like it. It's a good show. Those of you who know me know that you can often find me there on Monday nights. And sometimes just me. That's anyway, but except for a couple of millennial, there's a couple of millennial comics who I really cannot. They aren't my thing. I'll just say that. It's just not my thing. They lack the human skills that I so desire. And it's not because they're millennials; they just happen to be. But otherwise, I love that open mic. It's called the New York City Talent Show. It's the first. It's every Monday night. Sign ups at 8:30, and the show starts about 9:00. And they have a special guest act. It's hosted by Victor Vernardo and Tim Shea. It's at the Footlight Club, which is on Seneca Street, up in Ridgewood, which is next to Bushwick, on the Bushwick Ridgewood border ish, which is also the Ridgewood Bushwick border. It's the same one. And so, I was in that club, and I saw a sign in the bathroom. This is a sign that you've probably seen if you've gone out at all to any club whatsoever. And it says, "Employees must wash hands." I thought, wait a second, okay. Well, employees must wash hands, but what, like, everyone else can just walk around with bacteria and E. coli and contaminate everything? So yeah, I think we need to adjust that sign because everyone should wash their hands, not just employees. Okay. So let's move on. Okay. A couple more things to share for you in the remaining 15, 20 minutes of the show. I'd like to do a quick plug for the next show that comes on after me called We Only Listen to Dead People. It's a really, really strong music show. And the host of that show, Carol Gimble, asked me specifically to tell everyone about my mustard honey recipe. I'll tell you what, we're going to spend the rest of the show actually talking about how my cooking can save your life. Okay, I think I can dedicate 20 minutes to that. How my cooking can save your life. Okay, if you're not listening to this, then you are listening to something not as important. Okay, I've got to stop challenging other people okay. My mustard honey recipe can save your life. Now, generally, everyone talks about a honey mustard recipe, but no. Let's think about that for a second. What is the ratio between honey and mustard? In a proper honey mustard recipe, it's approximately 4 to 1. It's approximately 4 tablespoons of mustard for every 1 tablespoon of honey. Maybe even 5 to 1, because you don't want your dressing too sweet. So let's say 4.5 to 1. Let's call it even. 4.5 mustards to every 1 honey is approximately the ratio for a proper honey mustard recipe. So that's why I think the inverse is true, and that it's actually a mustard honey dressing, because you need to put the first ingredient first. It's called common culinary sense. So I'm going to tell you my recipe for mustard honey dressing. First off, you have a salad, and that's a really good start right there. Now, when you have your salad, you want to make sure that you go and get your produce as local and fresh and organic as possible. And this is not cliche, even though it's becoming it, but yet no one's doing it. Restaurants aren't doing it. People aren't doing it. I am the president of the 4th Street Food Co-op. I've been the president of this organization for the last 5 years. I talk to people about health and wellness. I understand what makes life long. I can, with the information that I've gained and from other people too, who've shared their information with me, such as I see people who are 85 years old, power walking and making conscious decisions and learning and growing. And to me, that's the most inspiring thing. So these 85-year-olds, you know, give or take, maybe 90, 92, they look great. They come into my food co-op, spry, and they buy certain herbs, turmeric, cayenne pepper. But then most specifically, they buy rolled oats or steel-cut oats in big pound bags. Now, I would jokingly say, what are you buying that big bag of rolled oats or steel-cut oats for? Are you feeding a horse? Ha ha ha. I am such a funny cashier. No. They're buying this food for longevity through their breakfast. Their breakfast, yes, for cliche and adage number three of the day, you know, you are what you eat. And then what's the other cliche? You know, pinch your pennies. And the third cliche is breakfast is the most important meal of the day. So for their breakfast, they have, you want to live a long time? Ask an 85-year-old what they have for breakfast. Ask, no, not just a regular 85-year-old. Ask a physically fit 85-year-old what they have for breakfast. And you might live a long time. Here's what they have for breakfast. Oatmeal. Steel-cut oats is ideal, or rolled oats is good too, but steel-cut oats is ideal. It takes about 7 minutes to cook. With walnuts. If you have a handful of walnuts every day, you will add years to life. And not just any walnuts, no, organic walnuts, unroasted, unsalted, organic nuts. Please take the extra effort it makes to do that. People bring me containers of nuts, and I can't use them because they're not organic. They have preservatives in them. They're loaded with salt. They might have oils in them as well, God forbid. And no, go to your local food co-op. Just look it up. You have one in your town. I promise you, you have one in your town. And get organic, raw walnuts. Organic, raw almonds. Can I tell you the story of the 100th almond? I'm going to. The 100th almond. If you eat almonds as much as I do, you'll get to your 100th almond pretty quickly. And you'll notice that the 100th almond has a bit of a bitter, strong taste. And so for the uninformed, you would say, what's wrong with this almond? Is something go bad with the batch? Is it a tainted batch? No, my friend. The 100th almond has a bitter taste because every 100 almonds is the 100th almond that has 100 times more antioxidant nutrient power than the other almonds combined, just because of the way Mother Nature works. One of them gets slammed with it, and the other ones just come up regular. I don't know, maybe it's too close to the earth, maybe it's too close not to the earth. But the 100th almond has a bitter taste, and so you welcome it, you worship it, and you chew it along with your other almonds for extreme nutritional value that comes in almonds. Now, I'm not going to tell you what the nutritional value is of almonds. You can look that up yourself, okay? I don't make any claims on my show, except for that my breakfast will make you live 100 years longer. Everything I talk about, just look up the information yourself and see what's up with that. Look up the health benefits of almonds. Look up the health detriments of meat. And, oh, shoot, I forgot to ask the trivia question. Okay, I'm going to go back in time here for a second. And then okay, so I'm going to go back. Okay, so once again, the trivia question. If you can answer this trivia question and send it to my email, to thependulumswings@yahoo.com, thependulumswings@yahoo.com. If you can answer this trivia question correctly, or even close, I will cook you dinner at my house, or lunch, but probably dinner, because dinner is the second most important meal of the day. I'll cook that for you at my house, and this dinner will add years to your life. Come on by. People who eat my cooking, can I just say this? I have about 15 minutes left in the show. People who eat my cooking say things such as, and these are quotes, "I feel like a real person for the first time in my life. Why can't I eat like this always? If I ate like this always, I'd never get sick. If I ate like this always, I'd live forever. I actually can feel my thoughts. I actually can feel myself." I mean, not in like a weird, you know, Pope Benedict kind of way, but no, I feel like a complete person for the first time in my life as a result of eating your dinner, Jason. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard that before. And it makes me feel like I know what I'm doing. Because I think that I do, but it's always good to have reassurance. Similarly, and I'll get back to the trivia question in a second. Don't worry. I've had a lot of bands, and then you know one of them was very successful, and then a lot of the other ones weren't as successful. So I know both sides of entertainment. I've seen almost the highest highs, and I've seen almost the lowest lows. And few people back and forth. It's not like I saw the lowest lows and then got to see the highest highs. No. I saw the lowest lows, saw the highest highs, then again saw the lowest lows, and went back and forth and back and forth. And not too many performers get the honor of a journey along those lines. Because when you have a journey like that, you have to get better. Because if someone keeps telling you how great you are, oh, musicians XYZ, you know, your songs are so good, and you just push a piano with one finger, and that's just the most perfect C note I've ever heard. Well, you're not going to get any better. If you don't have to make your bed every morning, you're not going to get any better as a person or a musician or a housekeeper. If you don't have to cook your own meals, you're not going to get connected to yourself. You're going to lose your interpretation, and you're going to miss out on a possible life experience, which to me, life experience is the most valuable life experience. And I'm really thankful for that. And it's just this journey that I'm on right now. I sometimes get down about my situation, but then sometimes I get rewarded in ways that I just know that no one else gets rewarded in. And but the part that gets me is that anyone else could do it too, because I'm doing it with very minimal finances. You know, I'm not sitting on a huge pile of money. I'm sitting on a little pile because I made some changes in my lifestyle that were really smart. And so now I have a little bit of money I'm sitting on. And it feels really good. I'm gonna get my guitar fixed up. I'm gonna get it set up, as they call it. And I'm gonna buy some really healthy supplements. And I'm gonna pay my rent on time. And it feels really good, because it wasn't always like that, you know. And I want to get to the point where I can, if I see someone who needs money, I'm gonna help them out. If someone puts out a request for money, you know, or help, not just creative stuff, because I did the creative stuff for years. It helped them out creatively, and I'll still keep doing that. But if someone needs money, I'm going to give it to them. If someone puts out a request on you know, for a call for, you know, an organization that they're involved in, and it needs $10,000 or $30,000, I'm going to make it happen. If it's something I believe in, or if it's a person I believe in, even if I believe in the person, but I don't believe in their organization or their cause, I'll still give it to them, because I believe in them, even if their views have gone astray. Or views have gone, you know, awry, or views have gone aspelt. Let me just give you the trivia question before I forget. Here's the trivia question, and then I'm going to get into a couple of recipes, and then we'll call it a day. Here's the trivia question. And if you know the answer to this question, please send the answer to thependulumswings@yahoo.com. That's my email. How and in what reason were the two major soda companies, Pepsi-Cola and Coca-Cola, how were they both involved and referenced and acknowledged in the lore and the truth of the assassination of our finest president, John F. Kennedy, who was elected? Our finest president would have been Robert Kennedy, but he didn't get elected. How were these organizations, corporations, both Coca-Cola and Pepsi-Cola, how were they intimately connected to the lore and truthfully, the truthful lore? Lore sounds like it's made up. How were they connected to the truth behind the assassination of our finest president, John F. Kennedy? How? And yes, I know that he made some mistakes in his earlier years, but that's why they assassinated him, because he was changing and he was ready to make peace with the Russians and treat Castro as a human being, which we're just barely just scratching the surface on right now. And of course, the civil rights stuff and all that, you know, it wasn't Johnson who did that. It was, and you know, oh God, don't get me started about Johnson. Don't get me started about JFK. Don't get me started about JFK. Anyway, dreams were meant to fall apart. And don't get me started about Lyndon Baines. Change them reins. Dreams were here but not forgotten, and don't get me started about Jackie O. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Dreams were meant to fall apart, and don't get me started about Harvey Lee and Bullets 3. Dreams were here but now forgotten, and don't get me started about Rubenstein or Palestine. Dreams were meant to fall apart, and don't get me started about Gary Null or the Grassy Null. Dreams were here but not forgotten, and don't get me started about Bobby Two, Cuckoo Kajub. Dreams were here but now they're gone, and don't get me started about Teddy Ted M. Teddy or Mary Jo Kopechne. Dreams were here, but now they're not. And don't get me started about John John's plane. It was clear there was no rain. Dreams were here, but now they're not. And don't get me started about JFK. Anyway, dreams were here, but now forgotten. And don't get me started about JFK. All right, seriously, I will not know when to stop. So once again, if you know the answer to our trivia question, answer it to me. Once again, my email for the 100th time is thependulumswings@yahoo.com. thependulumswings@yahoo.com. And the question is, how does Coca-Cola and Pepsi-Cola figure prominently and specifically in and within the John F. Kennedy Association, the John F. Kennedy assassination? Both soda companies play a role in the assassination, in the story, in the tale. But you know what? If I could quote Mick Jagger and Keith Richards, I shouted out, "Who killed the Kennedys?" But then, after all, well, you know the rest. Oh boy. My show always turns into this, doesn't it? It just turns into this whole mush fest by the end. My show just turns into mashed potatoes, usually by the 52-minute mark. You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. This is Jason Trachtenberg. I'm here the first Sunday of every month. If you like the show, tell Tom Tenney to make me a weekly. Make me a weekly, because I deserve it. This show is just that good. For me, anyway. Hopefully you like it, too. Let me let you know a little bit about what I have going on here in 2017. I'm starting a new band. Very excited about that. I'm actually, after 5 years, maybe 6 years, I am leaving the world of jazz. Jazz was very good to me, intellectually, spiritually, musically, artistically. But I'm going to give it a little break now, and I'm going to go back to vocal harmony pop rock for the next 2 or 3 years. I have a new band that I'm putting together. It's going to be a boy band with a couple of my favorite guys, and it's going to be a 3-part harmony, some very complicated harmonies. It's going to be the concept. It's going to be something a little bit different musically, but actually something that maybe sounds a little bit more like the band The Association, or 1966 era Rolling Stones, Brian Jones era, Beatles, of course, those kind of bands. It's gonna be more of a 60s kind of rock sort of thing, but with life experience that I was able to gain that those guys were not able to gain, because when they wrote their songs, they were 24, 25, 26 years old and didn't really experience the ups and downs of life and love that I have. So imagine what that would have been like, if the Beatles and the Stones, and even, Burt Bacharach and, those kind of writers, Carole King, Joni Mitchell and all that, the best of the best, Jimi Hendrix, if they would have experienced the same influences that we all have, the same musical influences, but then added to that, I have these life experiences that I got to experience. So it's going to be, let's just say next level up. And so we're going to take it to where only I can take it, because of my experience is unique to myself. And I would wish everyone else to have an experience that's unique to themselves too. Let me quickly tell you, we have 5 more minutes here, and I'm going to spend the last 5 minutes of the show telling you how my cooking can change your life. I'm going to give you a quick recipe that's one of my favorites of the last couple of days, even. I've been making this recipe so much. Is everyone familiar with tempeh? Tempeh is fermented soybeans. It's very high in, what is that stuff? I guess it's like, is it Acidophilus? The healthy bacteria? There's antibacteria and there's fermentation is what I'm thinking of. So it's a ferment. If you just do yourselves a favor and Google the powers of fermented foods, kimchi, kombucha, and tempeh is a great option. Miso and tempeh. Tempeh is the fermented soybean. It's readily available in anywhere these days, and it's a wonderful, wonderful substitute for the American staple meat. Here's how I make it. I slice my tempeh up and I let it marinate in tamari soy sauce. It's a kind of soy sauce you can get at health food store, tamari soy sauce or Bragg's liquid amino acids, which have all of the essential acids in them, So you don't need meat. You just use this salty substance called Bragg's liquid aminos. And maybe a little B12 supplementation, which comes along in most soy milk products. You don't need meat for a healthy existence. In fact, just the opposite is true. It will kill you. It is death. If you're eating meat, you are consuming death. You're killing yourselves, people. Please, do yourselves a favor. Because if I could quote John King, everyone, I can't control what people put in their mouths. You take your tempeh, you marinate it in your tamari soy sauce or in your Bragg's liquid aminos. Just for 15 minutes, kind of pour it from one bowl to the other. Then you pour it back from the other bowl back to the first bowl. Then you put it back to the other bowl to the second, back and forth. And then while that's marinating, you saute a carrot, you saute ginger, you saute an onion, and then you season it with, you season your sauteing with ginger powder, with cayenne pepper powder, 90,000 IHUs, international heat units. And then you add your marinated tempeh, and then you can make a Thai, and then and just saute it, stir it around in your cast iron pan with a wooden spoon. Just stir it around and around, and then if you want to make it Thai style, are you guys ready for this? I'm going, I think your radio is about to explode. You add a little bit of almond butter and a little bit of maple syrup, and you've made a Thai tempeh stir fry. It is the most delicious dish in the world, and I make it for lunch, and then I have a little bit left over for lunch the next day, and I take it with me wherever I go. And then on the side, make some short grain brown rice. Learn how to cook your rice properly. It's taken me over 25 years to learn how to cook my rice properly, so it's not going to happen overnight. But brown rice, folks, white rice should be illegal, right? Now, speaking of legal and illegal, I actually want to do something very interesting in 2017, is I'm taking on, I know I'm being so confrontational today, but that's because I feel like I'm onto something. I'm taking on the Village Voice in 2017, specifically their food editor, Mr. Zachary Feldman. Mr. Zachary Feldman recently came out with an article, which is on page 10 and 11 of the most recent Village Voice, December 28th, January 3rd, 2017, called The Best of the Rest of the Restaurants. Basically, if I could quote, I sampled hundreds of dishes from countless restaurants in 2016, but I couldn't let the year go by without giving a shout out to these 10 spots I missed the first time around. So obviously this is kind of like a follow-up to some other restaurants that he promoted earlier, but these are obviously of the hundreds of restaurants. These are still the 10 that he promoted. Now, I'm not going to name these restaurants, but I'm going to quickly just go over some of the foods that he thinks are worth writing about. And I'm about to take on him food for food item and say why his choices are more dangerous to the citizens of New York City than a Donald Trump presidency. Here's the foods he's advocating. A pig in the form of braised shoulder, crispy, chewy bacon, and crunchy pork cracklings. We have a carnivorous space at Queens Center with the Eileen Special Cheesecake territory and chicken Bella Gallo, breaded, fried, doused in Parmesan cream, topped with parmuscuto. I can't pronounce that. Then we have a chef doing sushi, which is loaded with contaminants. And of course, sushi does not have to mean fish. Oh my God, I'm running out of time. Sushi does not have to mean raw fish. It can mean a vegetable roll with brown rice, avocado, and seaweed. Sushi can be healthy. It does not have to mean raw fish. Anyway, let me quickly say, I'm taking him on to a debate. I've written a letter to the editor of the Village Voice, and I've challenged Mr. Zachary Feldman to a debate. And the debate is this. Zachary, are the food choices that you recommend, are they more dangerous to the citizens of New York City than a Trump presidency? Why? Because your food choices are a quadruple bypass-inducing culinary holocaust. Now, Trump, the worst that could happen is he could push the nuclear bomb, and he's not going to do that. He's just going to, be a goofy guy, who's sexist. All right. Thank you, Thought Pattern, Jason Trachtenberg. See you later. Thank you.